So I'm going to share just a little bit this morning. We're not going to speak for too long because the choir's going to come back and we get to sing together with them. They were awesome already, and I know you're probably just wanting me to get to stop talking and then let them come back so we can sing. But we're just going to share a few thoughts together this morning and then get right back to that. So we're glad that you are here today to talk about peace. We lit the Advent peace candle a moment ago. The first one was hope, and Dwayne shared about that last week while my wife and I are away celebrating our anniversary. And this week is the peace candle, and we'll be lighting the rest of them throughout this Advent season. Matthew 24, verse 6 says that in those days, speaking of the end times, in those days you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. War used to be one of those realities, wars and battles, that was felt firsthand really only by widows and brothers and sisters and moms and dads and friends. If you didn't know someone directly involved, the only way to find out was by secondhand reporting in newspapers and books, and later as news would make its way home from the front. Times have changed, haven't they? Times have changed. Media now is bringing us everything immediately. If you're not connected to the online world, you can often see it before it even makes it to the newsroom floor as well. I mean, it's incredible the speed of which we receive information. I think that one of the other things that has happened in the last several decades is that the human condition, I think, has changed as well. What is being probably by most media sources or pundits of current sociological trends, they would tout it as humanism and progress, really, which, and I think more, it's just kind of a me-ism. As long as I am safe, me, as long as I am safe and happy, then who cares what happens in some part of the world that I don't even know where it is and I don't really care to. As long as I'm okay, it's good. I think that's a me-ism. Now, you may be asking the question, why all this talk about wars? We get so close to Christmas. Isn't it supposed to be a season of hope and peace and love and understanding, all that warm, fuzzy stuff? And truly it is, and you'd be right in pointing that out. In the passage that we read together at the beginning from Isaiah chapter 9, there's these names that are given to the child of hope, the Messiah. He's Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, and this name we're going to land on today, Prince of Peace, on the second Sunday of Advent. The message of the prophets, though, when you think about it, Isaiah was a prophet to the people, and the message of the prophets, these kinds of message, must have seemed like the musings of madmen or dreamers at times. And if you were there, if you were a listener in that day and age, in that audience, the first time those words from Isaiah 9 were spoken, perhaps the first thought that would have entered your mind would have been, how does that work? How is that supposed to play out? A prince of peace whose government would increase and at the same time peace would increase. Those are opposing concepts, and they would have been in the minds of the hearers of that letter. It would kind of like if I said to you, hey, let's get together and watch exercise videos so we can get in shape. Now, some of you, that would be a really good entertaining experience and you wouldn't have to do the workout and you wouldn't get in shape. But it's kind of the same thing. It's like you've got to put in the work. The Old Testament, you need to understand this. In the Old Testament, it's kind of uncommon for the title Prince of Peace. And that's what this is here. The title to be used in the same sense that we think of it today. And we think of prince, we think of maybe Prince William or someone like that. We think of a son of royalty, okay? Son of a king, usually. But in the Old Testament, a prince may have been a son of royalty, but was more closely tied, and you need to get this, was more closely tied to the idea of leadership, but more specifically, military leadership and power. That's what they would have understood when they heard that prince idea. Sons of kings were literally just sons of kings. That's what they were called. So we have this idea of, and follow me here, we have this idea of the Messiah reigning on David's throne. Remember King David? Reigning on David's throne eternally, upholding it and establishing it with peace. It's not the way David did it. He did it through war and saw very little literal peace in his day and age. In fact, God told him that he wouldn't be the one to build the temple because of how he got his power and his throne. It's not the way David did it. He waged war against all his neighbors. But when Solomon came along, David's son, when Solomon came along, he was different. He made peace with his neighbors and was a wise ruler in that sense. You remember the story? He asked for wisdom to rule. Very different, diametrically almost opposed kinds of leadership style. And when you read the accounts of their lives, the difference is quite striking. David's is war and battle. Solomon's is peace, build a temple, and his wisdom in action. But now, this is really cool, they come together in a baby. How could that possibly be a realistic thought? Let's consider for a moment again what war is. It hardly needs a definition for us. I'm sure we could come up with one, but this is what Webster's dictionary says. It is an open and declared fighting between states and or nations. Okay, simple. So think North Korea, South Korea, the First and Second World Wars. I mean, think about the 80s and Russia and Afghanistan. Go back in history in North America, you have other wars that are understood in this nation, and wars of independence, and North versus the South, those sorts of things if you're from the States. We know what it is. It's two opposing forces that battle it out. But often in war, there are these turning points, and if you're a student of history or if you read books or like history at all, you'll find these points of demarcation where at that point in the battle, something turned, the battle changed, it was the beginning of the end. Think Pearl Harbor or Normandy or the fall of Saigon, things like that. And oftentimes these battles get sort of set up in terms of good versus evil, lines are drawn. Classic example of that from history is Adolf Hitler. He will go down and has gone down as a tyrant. Not many would dispute that. One writer has said this: the end of war does not bring out a desired condition of existence. The cause of war must be removed. The cause of war must be removed. There has been, and pardon putting it in this kind of context, but there has been a battle royale that has gone on for thousands of years, and it had a turning point that was unmistakable. A turning point in a war that still rages, yet has been won. The battle is the battle of ultimate good against ultimate evil. And this battle has an unmistakable turning point in the Christ event. The advent, or the coming of Jesus. That's what that word means. Advent just means the arrival or the coming of. The thing we now call Christmas. In Christmas, the event that is the event that removes the cause of war. The war started in the Garden of Eden in an act of disobedience, what we call sin, and it grew out from that point. Christmas brought the Prince of Peace, and he would remove the cause of war, sin. The thing that divides or keeps us separate from God. And he did that through a sinless life and a perfect sacrifice himself. I literally just received this picture by email this morning early, if you want to put that up for us, please. And I just thought, what a profound rendering of what's taking place in the decisiveness of this battle. So here's what you have. You have Eve on the left, holding the proverbial apple with the serpent snaked around her leg, and she's holding her head in shame. But then you have Mary carrying the Christ child and stepping on the serpent's head. These are all biblical images. This is the turning point. This is what happened. That original sin which created this war is being stomped out, as it were, by the arrival of the Christ child. I love it. I love the picture. It's so graphic, really. The problem is that the battle still rages on. If what I say is true, that the birth of Jesus, the Christ child event, is the event that removes the cause of war, then why is it still raging? And the answer to that question literally is twofold and simple to express, but quite difficult to grasp, really. But the first part of the answer is this. Jesus, and listen carefully, Jesus removed the cause of war once and for all. But all have to ask to receive that gift once. Okay? He removed it once and for all, but all have to ask to receive that gift once. The second part is this. Once you have recognized the responsibility that is yours to choose Christ as your victorious warring prince, if you will, then you must move beyond and become an active and growing part of the prince's kingdom, a kingdom of peace. So after all this talk of peace, you could still be asking the question of why, though. Why don't I have any? And maybe for some of you, this is being answered right now, even as I'm sharing these words with you. Maybe for some of you, that question has been answered just like God's tapping you on the shoulder right now, and you know why. But for others, you might be thinking that something or feeling that something is missing. Maybe others of you, there have been seasons of peace in your life, but they don't last. Could I be so bold as to say, because likely they are based on things that are not eternal, so they can't last. Wealth can't bring you eternal peace. Simple happiness can't. Situational happiness can't bring you eternal peace. Relational harmony, whatever that looks like for you, can't bring you eternal peace. Your career can't. Travel can't. We just spent 5 nights on the beach in Acapulco, and there was literally no one on the beach with us for 5 days. No one. Like, it was abandoned. It's very, very peaceful. But that can't bring eternal peace. Our passage tells us that of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. No end. That doesn't mean it ends in this life. No, it means never-ending peace. Because it's an eternal rule and it's an eternal reign over sin and death eternally. Peace is a gift from God, and we must accept that gift. He has made us as people who have the capacity to choose. That's a beautiful part of who we are, human beings with choice. And we must choose to accept him just as we would choose to accept any gift. If I have a gift, and I'm going to give it to someone, that someone would need to come and receive this gift. Anyone? Someone would need to come and receive it. It requires a step of faith and action. No one? How about I take a step towards you? Would that help? There's really nothing in there. Jesus. That's what Jesus did. He took a step towards us in his birth. He stepped towards us, stepped with us. But we have to receive that gift, accept that gift. So there's two possible ways this morning to accept that gift of peace. One is to accept what you have never received. You may have never asked Jesus to be your Prince of Peace. And it's not that difficult. All you have to do is ask. Confess that you are in need of a Prince of Peace. I sometimes use the language of you need a ruler, or you need a forgiver. You need a CEO in your life who has the capacity to bring things that no one else can and nothing else can. Accept what you have never received. Secondly, you could ask God to have control, complete control, by allowing His Spirit to fill every part of your life. Not just the easy stuff. But what about the hard stuff? The things that embarrass you, the things that are hard to let go of, the things that are hidden in the dark. You could ask Him to completely fill you and surrender it totally, and then let peace begin to fill you. Perhaps this morning all of us need to, as the old song says, give peace a chance. But it's eternal peace. That's what it is. It's not fleeting. It doesn't just roll around at Christmas. It's eternal. Let's pray together this morning.